Welcome to the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin here in Oklahoma. We have Larry Dickin on the line from Secaucus, New Jersey. Well, Larry, notice as we get ready to tape tonight for our UFO Files, Brazil's had their problems with their space program.
Oh, they certainly did, Jerry. I mean, that's most unfortunate.
A big tragedy down there, but they've had problems before. I don't know.
They seem to have a history of problems. I mean, trying to get, you know, their own program going. I do understand that there have been launches from that facility because it does offer some advantages in terms of it's actually cheaper to launch things in orbit when you're close to the equator than it is farther north. It doesn't take quite as much oomph to get something up there.
That's interesting. I'd never really thought of it in those terms, but you're right.
Right. Let's not get into the physics of that at this point in time.
Okay. Another thing I want to mention before, we do want to get into the power situation still yet, because you did a little research and we have some things on the website we'll talk about here in a moment.
Right.
But before I do that, I think I ought to mention Mary Sutherland mentioned you today on her radio show, in which you kind of refuted a situation that she had going about what is a hoax and what isn't a hoax in conjunction with a flying boomerang.
Yeah, I listened to her interview yesterday, not interview, but her commentary. She's now doing a daily commentary, which varies in length depending upon the subject. At any rate, she had a two-part program posted out there the other day on UFO hoaxes. And one of the things she mentioned was the 1985 boomerang sightings in upstate New York, and it actually extended down into New Jersey and out into Long Island and Connecticut as well. And there's a whole book written on the subject by Dr. Alan Hynek and his associates. Unfortunately, 2 years after that book was published, Dr. Hynek passed away. But his
comments?
Well, yes. And that was what I got back to her on.
Mm-hmm.
She reported part of the story. What she reported was absolutely correct,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, some of the sightings were written off by the media from, quote, sources stating that, you know, this was actually a hoax perpetrated by a group of, private plane pilots who have a little club up in, and they're based in Westchester County Airport. And supposedly they went out on a number of nights and flew in formation to make themselves look like a big flying boomerang with various colored lights and whatnot. And they turn their lights on and off and make it look like it's disappearing, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, as it turned out, the story of the members of this group, when you got down to actually questioning them, they could not substantiate the fact that they had ever made this flight, or more than one of them, actually, that they were even capable and had the training to do the kind of nighttime flying and flying in that close a formation. I mean, we're talking about, you know, wingtip to wingtip stuff, and at night. And a non-military pilot attempting to do that kind of showmanship, that's extremely dangerous.
Well, one of the interesting things I remember about that was the fact that Westchester Airport story about the airplanes flying in a formation, that turned out to be a hoax itself, didn't it?
One of them, yes, and that was what I referred to in my communication to Mary, is that I had seen one of these things with my own two eyes, and believe me, it looked nothing like a bunch of planes flying in formation.
Which could be dangerous. Now, if I remember correctly, in 1985, there in the New Jersey area, you actually saw, I think you told me that one time, you actually saw this boomerang.
Yes.
Well, I wonder if we have any flying boomerangs tonight on our UFO files. We'll find out. But before we do that, there's all of a sudden a lot of UFO conferences going on. And one in North Hollywood, interesting place there, the Beverly Garland Holiday Inn. I don't know if Beverly owns it or they just named it in honor of her or what. But it's a MUFON conference.
You sure it's not the Beverly Hills Holiday Inn?
No, it says Beverly Garland if you look at it.
Okay, I believe you, Jerry.
And by the way, that conference is coming up pretty fast. Not this weekend, but next weekend.
Certainly in North Hollywood, yeah. That makes sense.
Saturday and Sunday, they have it's pretty interesting people there. This Dr. Robert Woods. Is it Wood or Woods?
Wood, I believe.
Okay. Stanton Friedman has talked about him before. I guess they both deal on the subject of MJ-12.
Right. Okay. Yeah, he's somewhat controversial in the MJ-12 investigation area.
And Stanton really doesn't go along with quite a lot of what Dr. Wood says. And then I've done a couple of them with him in person, as I said. So, maybe. I don't think I can get to that one, but who knows? We're going to go out to Las Vegas on the West Coast in September. I don't know if I can move it up that fast or not. But later in the month, we'll be at Laughlin for a paranormal conference, really, more than UFOs.
Right.
That'd be the 27th and 28th, I think. Find that over on our paranormal section.
Right.
Yeah, we'll definitely be out there for that one.
Right. Yeah, we have a big posting for that conference. I think it would be a really, really interesting. One of the main speakers there this year is going to be Linda Moulton Howe, and she's going to be talking about the underwater ruins that have been discovered off the coast of Cuba, and at a very considerable depth, I might add. There's some 800 feet down, I think, at least. In other words, they're not just shallow things that could have been covered up in the last couple of thousand years. This is something that's been underwater for some time.
And, of course, she's famous for crop circle investigations and she's even done some other things, animal mutilations?
Yes. That was actually her initiation into the field of the strange and unknown. It's her initial reports on cattle mutilations when she was a star reporter at a TV station, which I don't remember what city she was in, but at any rate, that's where she got her start in the field.
Well, I haven't, talked to her in years and never had her on the air. I have talked to her in person, and I tracked her down in Pennsylvania. I don't know if that's where she still lives or not.
Yes, that's where she's living, yes.
So anyway, maybe we'll make a connection this time in Laughlin. It'll be at Harrah's. Down at the end of the strip there on Laughlin on the Colorado River, and I'm sure we'll, one person I'm sure we'll have is Jim, our buddy from Texas.
Mr. Mars.
Yes, and he's supposed to have had this book come out about 9/11, and I haven't heard anything about it, so we'll find out about that too, and then he's going to talk about an interesting subject.
Right.
There at the conference that's totally unrelated.
Right.
The Branson, actually it's near Branson, they have in November, and we have information there on our website about that one too. UFO conference. I think people just need to go over there and see who's there. Some pretty good speakers.
Right. It's an interesting setup.
Yeah.
There, because they don't actually have a website. They do have an interesting list of speakers, but is that they don't actually have a website that you can go to and get extensive information and make reservations, all sort of old-time communication. But they do have phone numbers, they do have addresses, and I do think that there is an email address listed there in which you can do some inquiries there.
Which is pretty rare.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about the power outage. Got a little quiet as far as the details recently, but we talked about it last week, about the 65 one. I think we said 77 about the UFO?
Yeah, I couldn't recall which one. There was actually some photographs of UFOs hovering over a power plant, but I recall that I might have mentioned that that was in 77, and if I did, I was incorrect. It was actually the 65 power outage, where there was a considerable number of UFOs sighted all over the Northeast United States, and in fact...
I think even one in Manhattan, right?
There was one observed over Manhattan just prior to the blackout. There was also one at a power transfer station that was supposedly the point at which the initial failure occurred in upstate New York, and there was also one spotted over the Niagara Falls power plant.
Hmm.
And all just prior to the outage occurring, and also in the days and weeks surrounding that. I mean, they were seen not only in the Northeast, all over the Northeast, really all over the country. I was surprised to see that there was actually mention of a sighting of a large UFO disc-shaped over Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1965. And there was a picture of it. Somebody got a shot. And it was published in Life magazine that year. I don't even remember that, but it happened.
Yeah, I don't remember it either, and I was around here during that time. The interesting thing that you brought up and is posted is the similarity of some of the things that happened in this power surge and the power surge previously.
Yes, we have, I have a comparison basically out there between the two blackouts, 1965 and this year's blackout, which there's a pretty good summary of that George Filer posted as part of our regular Filer's File report. So I pulled up an article that I found that gives a very detailed description of what happened in 1965. And I've highlighted a section in each story which shows a remarkable similarity in the fact that in both cases there was a reversing power surge that occurred on the northern leg of the Lake Erie transmission loop.
Now we talked about that last week. It went 300 megawatts going one way, and then it went 500 megawatts the other way and reversed just like that?
Right, instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Now that kind of a flip-flop would be enough to put a little stress on certain facilities, such as power lines. And of course they're trying to blame certain power lines basically getting overheated and sagging and shorting out as being the initiating cause. However, I think that is not the cause, but rather the effect of this gigantic reversing surge that went through the system. Oh, it was. It was like double that, and it was much stronger. So you said something to the effect, well, things must have gotten worse since then if we could only handle half of it. And the fact is that a lot of the equipment, the power lines themselves and the relay stations and the switches and whatnot and transformers throughout the whole system, are old and obsolete and should have been replaced a long time ago.
Yeah.
If they had have been, probably this time we might have been able to handle this situation. But
yeah, at least it may not have gone as widespread open.
As it did.
Actually, the power surge in 65 was even bigger than 500 megawatts.
Interesting parallel.
Yeah. Well, now you had a theory, though, and this is not about UFOs at all, but we might as well mention this now, that you have a theory that I had not heard before, and it really sounds pretty logical to me. And that is that this thing could have been caused by traitors?
Energy traitors.
Yes, not traitors to the country, but traitors. T-R-A-D-E-R-S, folks.
And if you wonder what we're referring to, is the first word that should come to your mind is deregulation, right?
And Enron would be the second word, because they were famous for this.
Now, what happened under deregulation is that it opened up a market for trading power from one utility company to another. And this is done constantly, day after day, you know, on the fly. People sit at their desks in office buildings, like right here in New York City, and Houston, Texas, certainly, when Enron was in business. And they sit there and they move power back and forth between different parts of the country. And this is, you know, all automated in the sense of when a trade is made, it sends information to the operating computers for the power companies to control their individual parts of the grid, and the transfers are made. And are there any checks and balances here to determine whether or not, you know, hey, maybe somebody's trading and somebody else is trading against them, and things are going to hit meet in the center and all hell's going to break loose? Apparently not.
Yeah, they don't have a central clearinghouse or anything. I mean, I guess the guys just hit their computer button and it goes to the power plant with the place where they're trading, you know, sending the excess or taking the excess, as according to how you want to phrase it, and the thing goes into automation, into operation, and you're right. I guess two people could have diverse instructions, and it could cause all kind of havoc at the same time.
Yeah, especially if there's no check to make sure this is really the right thing to do at the right time.
The hard thing to talk about this, Larry, is that, you know, power, electricity is invisible, and it's hard to think of it as a force. If it were water or something, you know, that you could ship back and forth across the country, you could understand it more. But I guess it's the same principle.
Yeah, so you want your equipment to be able to handle these situations. So it's really a two-pronged effort to correct the problem.
The transmission line. So as a result of that, these all these patents, well, we're getting far off the subject of UFOs, folks, and we'll get back to it in just a second. UFOs, it is. But I guess the utility companies have been making a lot of money on, you know, sending power and selling to other places, and sometimes to the detriment of their regular customers. Just one final thing here on this subject. No pictures of UFOs this time around, absolutely.
Not that have been reported so far. In other words, unlike the 65 event, is that we don't have any photos of UFOs hovering over power plants or transmission lines at this point. Not that we won't get.
You're listening to the UFO Files with Larry Dickin and Jerry Pippin. You can follow the sightings if you wish. While we're talking about them, by simply, we have a link there, and you just go right on over and read Filer's files, and you can look at Larry's postings on these two articles at the same time.
Yes, they're all there together.
Okay, now, I guess we'll start on the East Coast again this week.
Yes, we're going to begin in May. Now, you know, there is going to be some mention of UFOs and power stations and power lines, just as there were last week in our report. You remember the report that was out in southern Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
There is something happening that's been reported this week, and you know, we'll see what we uncover here, because I really haven't read all the reports.
Well, Maine is an interesting place, especially with the work of Rod Davis, our friend out in Las Vegas who used to live in Maine. It's a book called River of Fear, and he's coming through here next week on his way back to the East Coast for several book signings. And we're going to do an interview with him. So is this a spooky report? Looks pretty spooky.
Well, actually, in looking at this, Jerry, it's really a little historical perspective. This is not a report from last week. This is somebody who's writing it to George, just giving him some background on some things that he observed during the 1965 blackout.
Okay.
It's certainly of interest. It states that I've always enjoyed and been fascinated by your website, not ours, unfortunately, but
George's,
but hey, you know, let's assume that he's been over to see us as well, I hope. It seems that I should share some information with you. I went to college in New Hampshire in 1965 when the big power blackout happened on the East Coast. I was just going through the food line when all the food prep machines stopped and the lights blinked. I felt very strange, but the power came right back on. However, I sensed something big had just happened, so I went back to my dorm room and found out that there had been a massive power blackout on the East Coast. But I found out more than that as I started listening to local New England talk radio. See, talk radio is always there to help you.
Yeah, well, that's true. One way or the other, at least to get you thinking.
Well, I can assure you that during the blackout here, that's who I tuned into. We have our local talk radio, 1010.
Oh, they did some very good things. In fact, Infinity was patting each other on the back in an inter-office memo that I was privy to the other day about their New York stations, WCBS and others. And, of course, all of the stations really geared up and covered it well. And that's one thing radio still is, you know, even though there weren't as many people with portable radios this time around, I understand.
Right.
Back in this part of the country, almost everybody has a portable radio because of tornadoes and power outages.
Well, I tell you, I went out and bought a new clock radio that has a built-in battery backup.
That's a good idea.
So I went out and bought something that will operate, I tell you, to find a portable radio.
Yeah, hard to find.
Because I do have a miniature radio, but it has, little earplugs, no speaker in it. And, you know, it's the size of a pack of cigarettes and actually about half as thick. It's a very slim model, you know, but it only has earplugs for you to listen. There's no speaker in it. And that means if you got more than one person in the house, it's a little difficult. So in our house, we had two radios, both with earplugs, both plugged in, but it would have been a lot nicer to not have those things stuffed in your ears for hours. So I went out and bought something that will operate, I tell you, to find a portable radio.
It's hard to do anymore.
And it runs on batteries? Well, they're called boom boxes.
Yeah.
And I don't have any need for a boom box.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they don't have just a normal little portable radio like they used to have, you know, back then.
No, they don't.
Yeah, but maybe they'll start building them again now.
Strange, huh? Maybe so.
Anyway, so this guy, he went to college up there, and he's listening
to his local talk radio.
And what did he find out?
His reports were rampant immediately following the blackout that a fully credible Maine state trooper had reported seeing a UFO come down, tap into a power line, followed by the blackout. This story was all over the news in New England and New Hampshire. I believe the trooper had been interviewed, or at least talked to, and he's sticking by his story. But then, as so often happens, this news story and its details vanished and was never heard again in the subsequent discussion. No explanation was made of the story itself. In short, the entire account was erased as if it hadn't been the main topic of discussion. Blackout itself, when cause and effect are most obvious. We're being told that the current reversed itself suddenly in the Lake Erie loop. Remember, we just talked about that. and this was in the 65 line. In short, safeguards were put in effect after the 1977 New York City blackout, but the whole thing happened again, just like in 1965, except bigger. Well, bigger in the sense of a lot more customers online now than there were in 65. And again, no one has a clue. Hope I was able to offer some illumination. If there had been an EMP big enough to knock the power grid down, all the cars and computers, etc., would be dead too, I suspect. And by EMP, he means electromagnetic pulse, i.e., the result of a solar flare, which we talked about last week. And I did get confirmation, absolutely, from the source, the people who monitor such events, that there were no solar flare events in the days leading up to the blackout.
Yeah, that's one of the first things we talked about, you and me.
Right. Didn't happen.
Yeah, I talked to you, I guess your power had just come back on for about an hour and a half before it went on for the rest of the night.
Right.
And that was one of the questions we had at the time, and nobody had mentioned solar flares, and I guess it was a good reason. It was not a player.
Just went away.
Well, this flying saucer story connected with the power grids and all the pictures from 65, you're right, there were pictures around, but then they kind of, people just didn't talk about it after a while. It's kind of like back in 52 when all those flying saucers were over Washington and jets were scrambled and a couple of jets actually crashed and all kinds of things were happening. Made the headlines on the front page of the paper a couple of times, and it just kind of went away.
Yeah, and incidentally, in the 65 sightings, is there were also jet aircraft scrambled in pursuit of these UFOs that were seen over the power line. Yeah, that's you'll find that in the article that I have posted out there on the subject this week.
It's amazing how that happened. We'll get into the UFO sightings when we come back, okay? This is the UFO Files. I'm Jerry Pippin, along with Larry Dickens.